Cities produce more than 60% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Big cities get a lot of attention, but most household emissions in the U.S. actually come from communities outside urban cores, making them critical players in climate mitigation and climate justice. City Climate Corner explores how these small and mid-sized cities are tackling climate change and moving toward an equitable and sustainable future. I'm Abby Finnis.
And I'm Larry Kraft. We're co-hosts for City Climate Corner. Hey, Abby.
Hey, Larry.
Well, we have another Patreon supporter to acknowledge, Katie Walsh. Thank you, Katie. We are eternally grateful.
All right. Thank you, Katie.
So, Abby, what are you thinking about this week?
Well, I think there are a lot of things going on. The death of Twitter seems to be happening. But one story that I've been following on Twitter and I think is relevant for our conversation today is the Supreme Court has been hearing arguments on the Indian Child Welfare Act, which on its face is looking at the legality behind adoptions and blocking adoptions of Native children into non-Native families. But at its core, it's arguing, you know, that this is race-based and that violates equal protection, where the tribes are saying, no, this is a government-to-government protection. It's not about race. It's about tribal sovereignty. And so there's huge, huge, huge implications for however they decide to rule in this case, and the ruling won't come until the summer. If they rule in favor of these families, then it undermines tribal sovereignty in a way that will have huge impacts on other areas like gaming and energy resources and access to those. It's a case that we should be paying attention to for sure.
So how does it impact the energy, let's say the energy side of things?
A great place to go to get more of this information is where I learned about this is a podcast called This Land. It's really, really great and digs more in season two into these aspects, but touches on it in season one. But a lot of this is funded by fossil fuel companies, like the attorneys are funded by these fossil fuel companies because they have an interest in energy resources that are beneath tribal lands. You know, if you can start breaking up the legal ground for tribal sovereignty, then you can start accessing some of these things that you didn't have access to before.
That's fascinating that it's funded by fossil fuel companies, because on face, there would be no interest that they would have in a native adoption case.
Right. Again, I would encourage folks to go listen to the podcast, become more aware of this, because I think it's important for tribal sovereignty and it's important for all of us in terms of keeping fossil fuels in check.
And you talked about our episode this week, which is with a really high energy, inspiring individual, Mr. Bob Blake.
Yeah, we're really excited to chat with Bob today, who is a citizen of Red Lake Nation up in northern Minnesota, and he's going to share with us their vision for energy sovereignty.
Let's do it. Please note that this episode contains a brief discussion of suicide that some people may find disturbing.
Today, we are very pleased to be speaking with Bob Blake, who's the owner of Solar Bear and executive director of Native Sun. Welcome, Bob. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about Solar Bear and Native Sun?
Hi, everyone. My name is Bob Blake, and I am the owner of Solar Bear, and I am the executive director of Native Sun Community Power Development. Solar Bear is a solar developer located in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and likewise is Native Sun, which is a nonprofit also located in Minneapolis on Lake Street.
Great. And you're a citizen of Red Lake Nation. Can you tell us a little bit about the community and culture of Red Lake?
Yes. Red Lake is I think we have a population of 15,000. It's located 27 miles just north of Bemidji, Minnesota, in northern Minnesota. And it is just a beautiful community, beautiful place to live. I always love to drive up there and spend time. It's a world away from this world, so to speak. Beautiful country. It's located the biggest lake in the state of Minnesota, Landlocked Lake. And of course, Minnesota is the land of 10,000. So Red Lake is just a very special place.
Yeah, we've got a few of those. I think another thing that makes it very special is it's one of the very few tribes that still is on its ancestral land. Can you talk about the significance of that?
Yeah, Red Lake hasn't been, I guess you could say, allotted. And so it's still held intact by the tribe entirely. And so I think there's only two tribal nations out of 574 federally recognized tribes across the United States. So it holds a very special place in Native country. Mm-hmm. And it really is holds a very special place in my heart too. It's actually a really wonderful story too. When there was treaties being signed, one of the hereditary chiefs said that this land will be the land of our children and our grandchildren in time immemorial. And you have to understand, he was probably looking at some Gatling guns when he's mm-hmm. talking and he's saying this. So the amount of guts that took for him to speak like that to the United States government, and then because they were trying to have him allot the land, and he said no, and he told them that this is our land of our children and our grandchildren in time immemorial. And I just think to myself, wow, that probably took a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could have the guts to say that, staring at Gatling guns.
A real badass, right? That's awesome.
So how did you come up with the name Solar Bear? I love the name.
Well, my mother is from the Bear Clan, Mukwa.
Yeah.
And so when you pronounce it in Ojibwe, it's Gizis Omukwa. So Gizis means sun. And the O is kind of like what connects it. And Mukwa is bear, solar bear. So I intentionally wanted to do something to, like all good sons, good daughters, you want to honor your mother. And for all the hard work she put into me in my life. And I thought that this would be kind of a cool way to do it. But I wasn't thinking in people... when I first started this, we're saying, wow, do you know the marketing potential you have with this name?
It is a great name.
It's so.
So you don't just say, oh yeah, I know that. I thought about that.
I did that, about that. And so they were like, Bob, you can have the hibernation sale. You know, are you barely saving on your electricity bill? There was all these things that came to play. The reason of why I created Solar Bear. All those reasons were entirely not true. The name really came from because I wanted to honor my mother. The reality is that, yeah, it's such a cool opportunity there that came about from the name. So that's how Solar Bear basically got its name, was because of my mother's bear clan.
The moral of the story is honor your mother and good things happen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That really is the moral of the story, is honor your mother and good things will happen. And I really, I honestly can't, I don't even know how all this happened. I really don't. But I'm glad it happened, and I'm glad people were inspired and understand this was happening during the Trump administration. I mean,
so a supportive federal government.
Yeah. Everything was being shut down and I was somehow saying, we got to move forward. You know what I mean? And it really was kind of an interesting time. Trump was saying, let's all back away from this. And I was saying to tribal nations, well, let's all back in. If there was ever a time that we could take back this land morally, the time is now. And so I was saying the United States is backing out of the Paris Climate Agreement. This is where all 574 tribes can to morally say we're backing in. And so this was part of my speech, and it just really resonated, I think, with people. And of course, other tribes were like, absolutely, this is how we take back our land, you know, because we couldn't take it back physically, but we could take it back morally. And that was the idea behind all this. So I really think it was the time, and it was the orange guy. It really was the orange guy who laid that groundwork, I suppose.
maybe we won't steer down that path too much.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we'd like to talk about and set the context for is how energy conditions and energy costs impacts folks, especially Red Lake citizens. You often hear about energy burden, and that's the percent of income that goes towards energy costs. And what we've learned is that the average energy burden in Minnesota is about 2%, but in Red Lake, we read that it was 6%, which is high, three times the general energy burden. Can you talk about this disparity and tell us how energy burden impacts people's lives?
Yes, absolutely. In Red Lake, you know, you have a medium income between $8,000 to $10,000, right, a year. And what people don't understand is when you turn on your lights, that signal goes somewhere. Well, that signal is very far from the reservation. That signal travels through all those lines. And then it tells the little signal on the other end that it has to release energy because Larry is asking for it, right? Then it has to travel back. Well, by the time it gets to you, 50% of that energy has been lost through the lines, right? You're asking for 100% energy, but you're really paying 50% of it by the time it gets to you. All that energy, like, it adds up. And so you're talking about people's whose energy bills are literally the size of like their mortgage payments. And what the utility knows up there is that the tribe won't let these individuals go without electricity. So they're always there to back them up and help them if they can't pay their electricity bill. And so the utility up there uses these really terrible tricks and disconnection fees upon disconnection fees, reassigning different fee here, a fee there, a fee there. And when you look at all these fees, and all these fees really add up. And you see this time and time again with the co-ops that deal with tribal nations specifically. And you could take a comparison. How many times have I heard from people that say, boy, I get my electricity from Beltrami Electric down in Bemidji. And when I lived in Bemidji, it's nothing like when I have to deal with them when I lived in Red Lake. And this is wrong. This is completely wrong. But you have to put into context the area in which this is at. You know, it's Beltrami County. This is the only county in the United States that didn't allow refugee resettlement. They were in the national news for this. The jail at Beltrami County is currently under, and I still think it's under, federal investigation for the killing of people of color in their custody, okay? So, yeah, the city of Minneapolis is under federal investigation by the Department of Justice. Oh, yeah, the Beltrami County Jail is also under federal jurisdiction. So what I'm saying here is you have to have some context of what these people are dealing with and the institutional racism that these people are dealing with in this area, which is where Red Lake is located at. And so that permeates into the utility, that permeates into the judicial, the legal system up there. I'm not making this up. These are actual reports done by outside people. This is part of the problem that is happening in Red Lake around energy poverty, and it's systemic. This is the reason why Bob is trying to create a tribal utility to take care of this problem. But not only that, though, what I'm also trying to do is what I think is happening in this community, which is a human health crisis. And can we solve this human health crisis through renewable energy? I'm thinking we can. And if I could quantify and qualify those numbers, then using Red Lake as like a petri dish, and I can show them that suicide rates, alcoholism, drug addiction, all these things that I believe are plaguing this community and shortening the lifespan. Why do people live a shorter life from Red Lake than, say, Bemidji, which is just 30 miles away? What are the factors that are affecting that? I really do believe that it's poverty. Poverty is at the main root of all these issues. So if I can attack poverty by putting in an energy system that will then create entrepreneurial opportunities and it'll be a ripple effect for the community, that's what I'm going to try and do. And if I could quantify and qualify that data, right, by bringing that to lawmakers and showing them exactly, look at what happened here, then maybe we should do this in every community across the country, right? So I'm not only trying to talk about saving Red Lake, I'm talking about saving every community that's having issues. So that's what I'm really trying to hope that that's ultimately going to happen here.
Hey, we're taking a quick break to say if you like what you're hearing, please support us. You can do so by clicking the Support Us link on our website at cityclimatecorner.com, or you can go to our store and get some cool merch.
Let's say it's interesting because I was thinking you'd be talking about the savings of energy savings, which certainly is significant, but you're even thinking beyond that. It's not just those savings, but it's the economic activity that can be created locally with entrepreneurial activities and by the jobs that can be created by renewable energy.
Right. I had a cousin who recently, a couple of months ago, his son walked into the Shields out in Eden Prairie, took a 9mm gun and shot himself in the head. I had one of my friend's son walk 3 miles away from their house, shot himself in the head. Okay. What I'm trying to do is much deeper than just energy. I'm trying to get to the very heart of what's the reason why this is what drives me, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to save people's lives. And like I said, there's a human health crisis happening in tribal country, and I think renewable energy can help solve it. Now, if I can prove that and I can show people this is how we cured it through renewable energy, then maybe we should do this in every community across this country. Mm-hmm. That is not only going to make the planet healthy, the environment healthy around us, but we're also probably going to save some lives, right? I get it. You know, all the profits, all the money should go to one place. You know, it should go to all of the top 1%. And, you know, we should just keep the status quo, right? I'm all there with you guys, right? But in something like this, where the entire world is getting over 180,000 terawatts of energy each day from this thing called the sun that can power our needs beyond our wildest dreams for time immemorial, you know, off of one day, you know, if we just learn how to do it like nature has shown us, like the plants have shown us, to capture the renewable energy and through solar, through renewable and distributed energy resources, then I say we do it and we try to make our communities healthier and wealthier at the same time. So this is what I'm attempting. I know it seems like it's pretty much out there, but I believe that there is a direct connection between what the energy that the sun provides, you know, for our world and for our environment and how that affects us as human beings. And incidentally, just real quickly, I say this in my when I talk to tribes too, that we are in a billion-dollar industry, which is gaming. We need to be in the energy game, which is a trillion-dollar industry. We are in the wrong game, people. Mm. We need to create tribal utilities. We need to be able to create our own power companies. We need to be able to be a part of this energy game. And it's only because that we have the technology right now that we're able to float down this way now. So that's why this is so important to tribal communities.
Yeah, that feeds into the vision for Red Lake, right? Which is to have total energy sovereignty. And I think that's kind of what you're describing, but could you elaborate a bit more on what total energy sovereignty is?
Yeah, it's the creation of a tribal utility, which is what I've been working on. And the creation of 200 to 400 megawatts of solar that we're going to put on the grid through our Tribal Energy Development Organization, which we are the only one out of 574 tribes to have that moniker right now. The TITO is what they call it. That's going to allow us to put energy on the market. That's really exciting because we're all going through this in real time. It's all brand new. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that utilities haven't had to deal with any new players on the market. They haven't had to deal with anybody else. This is a big shakeup in their world, and they're dinosaurs, and they're entrenched in our legislatives, in our political process. There's no elbowing these guys.
Yeah.
There's a new kid on the block.
You got to come in like an asteroid, right?
Yep. There's a new kid on the block. coming like a wrecking ball. You know, yeah. It really is. We are coming in like a wrecking ball. And, you know, it's really going to be interesting to see how that Trojan horse gets into the energy system and what comes after that, right?
Yeah. Can you talk about the structure a little bit? I mean, it sounds like you're both doing a lot to develop solar within the community and selling to citizens within the community. But are you also talking about exporting and selling electricity on the larger market as well, like a utility?
Absolutely. Yep, that's exactly what we're going to be doing. And what's exciting about that is, how does that play itself out, right? How does that open up the doors for a Boulder, Colorado to municipalize?
Right.
You could see where all this can go. That's what's really exciting about all this. We'll see how history judges Bob Blake in 30 years. Right? Honestly, we're going to see how history judges me. And was this the beginning of the democratizing of our energy system? We've got House File 1647 that is in the Minnesota House right now.
Maybe I should write that down.
That is going to be passed. That's for the Tribal Energy Advisory Board. And I've got so many people to thank for that, but those are the seedlings for, you know, a tribal utilities commission. No one understands how important that is, but down the road, that's going to be something that is going to be a game changer and a roadmap for the other states and tribal nations to follow. So there is a lot of work that still needs to be done, but I've been working on this for a while, and it takes time. But I'm really excited where all this is going. And like I said, just telling somebody, Native people ain't going to understand what I did until 30 years from now. But they're going to look back and say, that was smart. That was smart. And they're going to be like, I'm glad this guy did that. You know, not doing it for that reason, doing it for the planet, doing it for the environment, doing it for all of us. And that really is what drives my work.
Yeah, I think that the solar revolution that's happening does lend itself to completely disrupt the system that we have. And so I think that it is to any community's advantage to think about, how do we maximize solar energy in our community? And you're taking it a step further and saying, we don't just want solar powering the homes and businesses in our community, but we also want to own that infrastructure. We want to sell to the grid and be a part of this larger system as well. So I do think that there's a lot of ground you're breaking there.
And if I could just say too, before the pandemic, I probably looked like a crazy man speaking about this. But after the pandemic just basically showed the tribes that while they were teetering on bankruptcy because of their casinos, because nobody was going to the casinos and pulling slot machines. And the people that were most accessible to this virus were those individuals that had the most disposable income. And so they're no longer pulling slots at the casinos. I think the tribe started thinking to themselves, well, what's that guy again talking about renewable energy again? That might be something. The sun does shine every day. That is going to bring revenue in every day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's really what I think also helped me too. This is all just timing. It's just timing. I'm just the right guy, the right time, and the right place in history for all this to be happening. I was screaming from the top of my lungs 7 years ago. No one would listen to me. Nobody would even get the Carter to even take a shot at that. What's Bob Blake talking about? Wow. You know, the Inflation Reduction Act just changed everything. There's people there in the senator's office that I need to thank for all the work that they did in helping getting that legislation, that policy implemented, especially the direct pay for tribal nations. And for those of you that know what I'm talking about, know who I'm talking about, thank you. Because you have really made a big difference in tribal nation communities. This is all just very important. Man, I'm just so excited to see where this comes. And it is a great time to be alive, people. That's all I can say. Bob Blake gets up every day and he gets to do the coolest things. And I can't believe that this is my life, honestly.
The other piece to this that's happening at the same time is, as we are having to adapt to the increasing impacts of the warming that's happened, you're seeing more stresses on the centralized grid model. Where you talk to folks in California who are having all these power cuts because of they have to shut off some power sometimes because they're worried about starting forest fires or with increasing storms. And you just hear down in Florida where there is the community that stayed up all the time was one that was self-sufficient from an energy perspective. the kind of things you're talking about, I think, also build resilience into the system in the world we're facing.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, Larry. And I've said, this isn't just about tribal nations wanting to have a more distributed energy system, right? We're not trying to be ERCOT. That's not what we're trying to do. This is actually a national security issue in that we can't be so connected because we are going to get nefarious forces from outside of our country that are going to attack our infrastructure. And it is happening. It is currently happening right now. You know, with that being said, Larry, it's exactly what's happening in the world today. Now more than ever, we have to think about national security when we're doing these types of things. So just know that ultimately, in the end, we're all on the same team. But our tribal nation is going to have their own utilities? Yes. Our city is going to be municipalized? Yes. Is big IOUs, investor-owned utilities, going to have to share the grid with new players coming? Yes. Is their model going to have to be changed up a little bit? It is going to have to be changed. Renewable energy just clearly states that this is happening. All this is coming and it is happening in real time. We have to move and adapt to the market. Like I said, it's a great time to be alive and be in energy. I'm so glad I'm here. I'm so glad I'm in this space because there's no other place I'd rather be.
So I imagine as you build out solar energy, part of your thing you think about is how do you not just connect it right to the grid, but store it locally as you need it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've got storage involved in a lot of our projects and our microgrid that we're currently developing. And, you know, we just had a 40 kilowatt vanadium flow battery get delivered. And what's really exciting about this is there's all this new technology and in a community like Red Lake, where these people are going to be learning about this. You know, charging stations coming into this community, electric vehicles coming into this community. I gush.
Yeah.
I mean, this was all just a dream I had for Red Lake, and it's happening. You know, it was one of the best things when I heard our tribal chairman, Siki, said that there was a group of young kids that came into his office because he has an open door policy with the tribe. So any tribal member can walk in and talk to him about anything they want. And so this group of young kids were touring the tribal building, the government building, and they walked in. And one of the first questions that they had was, Chairman Siki, can we meet Solar Bear?
That's cool.
And they wanted to talk about renewable energy with the chairman. And yeah. I just, to no end, I just started laughing. And he said, I wish you were here because I wanted them to meet you and talk to you so you could answer all their questions.
That's great.
What's great, though, is that those seeds are being planted with them. And that's what come, you know, the Solar Cub program is going to be so important. And it's probably going to be the most important work that I do. And we received $500,000 to work on this project with PBS. And it's developing a K-12 curriculum around the Solar Bear family and how they're going to teach STEM in language and culture. So I found out that Native children graduate at a much higher level if they have language and culture into their curriculum. These seeds are really important to plant at an early age because I want kids to grow up and, you know, every year they're going to get a dose of this is the way that they're planting it. And they're going to become these mini Bob Blakes.
Yeah. That's a great segue. By the way, I'll notice there was the Solar Cub, right? So that's a nice tie-in.
The Solar Cub, yeah. The Solar Cub program.
Thanks to Mom there for that. The segue is to, because part of your vision, right, is also not just energy self-sufficiency, but more economic development, economic self-sufficiency. So developing that workforce locally. So how is that going? What kind of interest are you seeing in training programs in Red Lake for folks to become solar installers and the like?
We currently are putting together a schedule to train community members around operation and maintenance and installation of the electric vehicle charging stations that we're going to be putting up there. I just had a conversation with some other people about doing the heating wall systems out of White Earth with Winona's people, 8th Fire Solar. And also, too, we have a training working grant in with the DOE that we hope to be able to be doing some renewable energy training and training electricians. All this stuff is in the works currently right now because we're anticipating to be building this really huge project. all these areas are being hammered out right now and worked on. It's really exciting. I am just beyond myself to think about the opportunities and the jobs that all this is going to create. What I'm hoping for is that everybody gets on the same boat and starts moving in one direction. And by doing so, that all these disparities, like I've talked about, that are plaguing this community are going to start to fall to the wayside. And so that's what I'm hoping that's going to happen. So I get everybody moving in one direction, which is the environment, which is our community. I believe personally that these disparities that are plaguing this community are going to fall to the wayside. If I could quantify and qualify that, then we take that information to the lawmakers and we show them the success that we had. And they say, well, man, we should do this in Fifth Ward, Houston, Compton, California, Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Anyways, maybe we should just do this in communities that we know that are plagued by these disparities. And we see it have worked here, it could work other places. That's really the whole idea behind all this and the jobs and the purpose, right? I'm getting at purpose, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have purpose, you have a reason to get up every day. And that's what I'm really trying to get at too, is give these people purpose, a reason to get up and serve the community every day and have a circular economy, not have this colonial capitalism model that is preying on this community and exploiting it like it has in the past. This allows them to be able to deal with the outside world on their terms instead of the outside world always dealing with them on their terms. I'm trying to empower this community, really what I'm trying to do with all this. And it gets to a much deeper and granular level, but I could probably talk about that for 2 hours.
Well, I love your vision for not just the community, but the ripple effects beyond that. And this might be one of our more radical episodes, but I think that's all right. What advice do you have for other communities who might want to pursue their own energy sovereignty down the road?
Yeah, I just got asked this question last night. I did a webinar with some community action groups. And interesting enough, there was some city council people on the call last night. I told them, I said, create your own Climate Justice Advisory Board. Create your own group of citizens that want to attack climate change, because like it or not, climate change is coming to a community near you. And if you are not prepared for it, it is going to be devastating for your community. You'd be surprised at how many citizens in your community, voters, right, want to be a part of the solution. I have met some of the best people in these groups that I've been involved with in the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul. We talk bike lanes to energy infrastructure to pipelines. And it's been really incredible experience. The depth and knowledge of the people that I serve on these boards with are just remarkable. And they do it on their own time and they do it freely because they love their community. That would be my advice to all city officials, county officials, whatever, form a board, get your mayor or whatever to sign off on it and get $1,000 to pay for some lunches or something. Who cares? But the fact is you bring them all together and they will do the work for you. I mean, they will bring in the resources, the grant writing, all that stuff. And that's exactly what we ended up doing with the groups that I've been on. That's what I would highly recommend.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Well, thank you, Miigwech, Abby and Larry. Thank you for having me.
All right, Larry, what'd you think?
Well, I was inspired by this discussion. His energy and vision is really infectious. And, you know, I came in after researching about what's going on there, thinking that this was going to be a discussion about energy sovereignty and how you actually do it and batteries and solar and stuff like that. And was just so pleasantly blown away, really, of his vision and how it is so much more than that to him and how uplifting that is.
Yeah, I agree. And thinking more broadly about how our lives are impacted by something that we don't always think about. I'm saying that as the we in general, you know, are not always thinking about energy and where it comes from and what our interaction is, right? People flip on the lights and they're there. That's true for a lot of homes, but as that energy burden increases, you maybe think about it more in terms of economic decisions and the choices that you have to make monthly to make your budget work. But if we do start thinking about it, not just in terms of making those budgets work, but also what does this have on our health? If we're not combusting fuels for our energy sources, if we're harnessing that natural energy from the sun, it has impacts also on our budgets. It has impacts for our local economic stimulus. I love that he's tying all of that together as a solution for a lot of these issues of poverty and health disparities that are going on in Red Lake.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the side benefits of attacking climate change. And when I talk about it politically, I often mention that there's this tremendous opportunity as we address this issue to clean the air and water and restore our relationship with the natural world and address inequalities. And his vision is that and more. It is such an opportunity. And I think he's really, I was going to say grabbing the bull by the horns, but it's maybe grabbing the bear by the fur.
Yeah, right. Wrestling the bear.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's a cool opportunity to get people engaged. And, you know, he talked a lot about purpose, and this is his purpose, and he wants to see it be a purpose for other people and reconnecting with the earth and what is given and what we can do with that. I love the program, including these cultural and energy elements in K-12 learning. I think that that's
the Solar Cub program.
Yeah, I know. It's so cute. You know, at the end of the episode, I said that this was one of our more radical episodes. And I think that it is and it isn't. And there's other movements, you know, to democratize energy more. And we see that in Winnesheek, and he mentioned Boulder, and Minneapolis has looked at municipalizing its utility. And I do think that there is this huge opportunity. I think he's at the beginning of that conversation. And so it kind of seems radical to say, hey, we're going to take over and we're going to be a utility and we're going to produce energy for our citizens and we're going to export energy. And as you talk about, he's inspiring and his vision, it's really cool. And so I love to see where this is going and for people to be able to continue to harness their own energy and not be held back by that. I think that there's just so much opportunity to eliminate those disparities and give people a chance at being able to thrive and doing that through clean energy.
And the interesting thing is, I mentioned this at the end of the interview, that with climate change happening, it's putting more and more stress on a centralized grid, where having more decentralization, which lends itself to the kind of things that Bob is trying to do, is actually good for resiliency. So where I think you would have said, well, this would have been crazy 20 or 30 years ago. Now, the way we need to solve the problem that makes it much more logical to do stuff like this and even beneficial.
Mm-hmm. And I think that gaining that sort of independence, and I think for tribal communities, especially where they have been so harmed by governmental policies that they've become so dependent upon really kind of crappy government assistance, to break free of that through energy independence, I think is revolutionary. And I just love to see what's going on in Minnesota. It's not just Red Lake. You know, he mentioned White Earth and Winona LaDuke and other tribes up there. And in Northeast Minnesota, tribes are leading the way on climate adaptation. And so there's just so much to learn. And I'm glad that, you know, the government is actually supporting these efforts. And so I think there's going to be a lot of awesome success to come from this, and love to see those ripple effects.
Hear, hear.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of City Climate Corner. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to subscribe and give us a review. If you're able, become a monthly supporter through Patreon. As always, you can find more information on this topic and resources from each episode's guests on our webpage, cityclimatecorner.com. If you have an idea for the show, send us an email at cityclimatecorner@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
City Climate Corner is produced by Abby Finnis and me, Larry Kraft, edited by me. Music by
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.